Why do they have a policy?
So Matt, you want to make a beer run?
I would love to make a beer run.
I'm up for it.
All right. All my interviewers were asking me the classes I was taking, and I was selling your praises all over the place. Especially to the Harvard people. They were like, is Charlie Nesson still teaching? I was like, oh, you better believe it. Any requests?
Mostly from the man who's paying for it.
No, just anything fun.
All right.
Are you up and running?
All set. Did you do any of your laptop today, or are you all set?
Yes, that would be excellent if you
would. Okay.
Is just say it's locked and okay. I'll be right there. Yeah, good. Would you do me a favor? Would you go up and look through the lens finder? And frame the shot as wide as it is.
Okay.
As a wide shot. And tell me what seats you see. As wide as it goes. So the question is, can we organize ourselves so that on any camera shot, the seats are full?
Well, right now, we can't really see.
So take control of it. Naomi, come over here in the middle.
Right here?
Right in the middle.
No, you can, yeah, you can see any empty desks, no matter.
You can't see Naomi's head?
I can see Naomi's head from here.
Uh-huh.
But if I zoom in, then it's not. Would you like to be able to see your head?
Well, I have a couple of heads in there, it'd be good.
Okay.
So, can we move from the ends? Ryan, I don't mean to disturb you. Could somebody move into the center here so that we have heads in the camera angles?
I'll
move
there.
I'm gonna move to a chair that works.
Just somewhere up there in the center.
Okay.
Line of sight. Plan for today has yet to be disclosed.
Is it going to be disclosed?
Hmm?
Is it going to be disclosed?
Well, yes, I think so. I don't know. It's sort of evolved goes along. It's like, so far, it's to take stock. It's to see where we are and to see if we can figure out where we're going. All right, and the taking stock has to do with what's been the Cyber One story so far. And where it's going has to do with what's potentially on the table. I hope you had a good flyout week. Did you learn a whole lot in your flyout week? I'd be very curious to hear, yeah?
I played a lot of poker.
Did you? That was what you did with your flyout week, was play poker.
2 or 3 days of it. I learned a lot about limit poker.
Wow. Well, that's really putting your time to work. Anybody else use their time anywhere near as constructively as that? I went to Washington with Andrew. Part of this mission to go speak to congressmen about Barney Frank's bill to repeal the UGIA, the Unlawful Internet Gambling Enforcement Act. It was just instructive from the moment it started. First, the thing that it struck me most was the distinction in Washington between principle and pragmatism. It's like, for the most part, you don't hear principle talk at all. Certainly not at the level of staff, which was where a lot of this goes on. The only principle that I heard spoken about was Barney Frank, who articulated the libertarian principle and actually quoted John Stuart Mill talking about basically the right to do what you want as long as you don't injure other people, and seeing that expressed in this bill that he's been pushing forward. But really almost at the same time he was making his speech, he was saying, but if this doesn't look like it's going to move forward, I'll fall back to something. And so he was almost like saying, yeah, if this doesn't make it, we'll fall back to something that's less principled. So it's this mix of pragmatism. And the other thing that came through clearly was that these congressmen, in listening to a constituency, they put the burden on the constituency. It's like, here I'm the congressman, you've come to talk to me about something. And I'm here, well, I have several missions. The first mission is to have you leave feeling that I've listened to you. That's like, okay. And if I get through the meeting with you feeling like I've listened to you and I haven't made any commitments, that's a win for me. Okay? So just the feeling of understanding that and knowing that's what you're coming into, that's the attitude, starting position of the guy who's sitting that you're talking to, was just very enlightening. And so it kind of put a focus on, well, what do you want to say to this person in those circumstances? The person knows, here I am, I'm sitting there, I've got my schedule, it's chock-a-block full, it's just like office hours at school. And now we've got the delegation coming in from the Poker Players Alliance. And they're scheduled to be here from 3:45 to 4. And you come in. How do you break through that kind of structure so that you actually move the person in some way that counts for something? That's a really interesting question. And understanding that that's what this guy's attitude is sitting there, for starters, is certainly a way to help, a way to start.
So is it always a one-on-one meeting, or was in more than one person at a time, kind of structured in the meeting?
I believe that all of the meetings were not one-on-one, were no one-on-one meetings. The typical meeting would be a group. To the extent that they could, they included a professional poker player in the group, and that proved to be amazingly effective. I was amazed at the effect of that, that there's a curiosity that comes with bringing a celebrity into a room with one of these people. They actually slightly vary the valence so that the person wants to speak to you a little bit. And so that really was quite striking.
What was the process like for getting these meetings and selecting who you were going to meet with? I mean, I'm assuming you met with the members of the committee in which the bill was proposed, right?
I don't actually know. I can tell you what I saw. I'm down there as the guest of the Poker Players Alliance, which is holding this meeting. I'm asked to participate on a panel that will take place at the Rayburn Building, along with Andrew Woods, and moderated by the guy who runs, is the executive director, basically the staff guy of the Poker Players Alliance, and with Howard Lederer, and I still haven't got his full name, Bialko, and a guy named Ken Adams. Bialko seems to be a kind of libertarian person. I listened to him when he testified at the Frank hearing and thought that he made tremendous good sense. And Ken Adams seems to just be a really knowledgeable guy about how Washington politics works, and lucidly explain how one issue constituencies magnify their power. Quite remarkable. Ultimately being part of a pitch, I think, to the Poker Players Alliance people who had assembled for this thing to start to think of themselves as a one issue constituency. That was likewise fascinating. So just to kind of focus it, the thing that was most interesting to me as a lawyer and thinking about what I was learning as how the way law works has to do with parsing out these bills. The Frank bill would do two things. It would reverse the unlawful Internet Gambling Enforcement Act. And it would establish a regulatory structure within which online gaming would take place that basically puts the federal government in the position of regulator. Right. There is a second bill that's around. The Frank bill applies to all gaming. There's a second bill that's around, advanced by Congressman Wexler from Florida, which is a carve-out poker bill. Basically says okay to poker. And Wexler is on the Frank committee. He's a Democrat who's on the Frank committee. And the logic of that means that the Wexler bill can't move forward until Barney's bill, as chairman of the committee, is pushed aside. But the Wexler bill then looks like the fallback position that the poker people are wanting. Right? But the problem with that, from Barney's point of view, is that his principle is libertarian. And the Wexler bill isn't. The Wexler bill privileges one form of gambling over another. Which makes it awkward for Barney. And the question that was of interest to me, and is now currently of extreme interest to me, is whether it's possible to carve out what you might think of as a more elegant legal attack on the problem. And the one that I'm favoring is a an articulation of a transformation from a gambling game to a tournament play game that has taken place in poker. That is basically taking the argument that you've seen develop here, where Addington describes the birth of poker in Texas, and it goes on the road, and it goes to Las Vegas, and then they invent the World Series in order to attract the seals, and then Lederer talks about television transforming the tournament so that it's now what you see, this World Series event that's on TV, where I think people looking at it to a large extent don't see anything wrong happening, and which I think is arguably not gambling. Not gambling in the sense that people have thought of gambling in the past. As tournament play, you pay an entry fee just the way you do for lots of things, horse shows, many forms of tournament. The chips have no value. You can't cash them in. You win according to how you finish. So tournament distinct from cash game, which is clearly a form of gambling, seems like a line that could be drawn. And drawn in a way that it would allow Barney, for example, to say, I'm still consistent with my libertarian principle to affirm that that form of poker is perfectly lawful and leave the world of gambling still unresolved. At least that's an argument that I'm liking a lot, and liking it for the lawyer's reason that it carves the thinnest line toward what you want. It requires the least movement by opposing interests in order to get the shift that you're looking for. It's as win-win as you can make it for every constituency. So I'm excited about that. Then what else happened? More poker, afraid. The Absolute Poker scandal. Has anybody heard of this? Absolute Poker is online poker. There's an online poker tournament. The guy who came in second complained to the company that he'd been cheated, that somehow the guy who won it had a superset, was a super-powered person who was able to see all the hands on the table. The Absolute company then released the file of the hand histories, complete hand history, so that we could go to the net, I probably should do it in a minute, and you can actually see a video of the hands being played in, you know, it's like goes so fast, but you actually see the guy, you see the cheating. And it's a wonderful challenge just to look at it and ask yourself, what are the rules this guy is following? What, how is he using the information about the hands that he can see? So when this file came out, it was not in an immediately readable form, but basically interested people went to work on it. It's like an experience of the open net. And it was deciphered and then statistically analyzed and conclusively demonstrates that there was someone who had access to all the hands. And they've tracked it then with various devices. And I don't know what the current is. Have they actually found the real guy yet? He's back at the beginning somewhere.
Yeah, I think it was one of the co-founders of the site, or one of the owners, somehow had access to
it. It was a programmer. Well, I think it was a co-founder.
Really?
It was just some guy who worked there who had talked to people higher up and said that there are security flaws in the system. And they just like kind of shot him off and said that there wasn't any security flaws. So in order to prove to them, like himself, illegally, that there were security flaws, he hacked into the system and was able to look at everyone else's hands while the game was going on. So it wasn't like a co-founder. It wasn't like someone who was like a head part of the company like trying to actually fleece the people. It was someone there who was trying to prove a point to the people who are the high-powered people that there was flaws in the system. Or so I read.
That's his defense case. That's fascinating, though. Where'd you read that? I don't catch
it. Maybe it was in the New York Times, or I can't even remember.
Is it also fairly common, not common, but at least it's happened before, that people sort of, you basically play by computer, so that they've actually, like I remember there's a kid in college who basically one of the sites posts all the screenshots that are in the game, so every single screenshot. Based on that, you can actually program something that can basically be a computer playing poker for you, in the sense that it actually takes all the hand histories and by opponent. That, so you, it's basically like a super poker player. And I would imagine that's got to be fairly common among people who have sort of programming skills. Whether that's
that's actually a different problem. It's a very interesting problem. Though. That is the intelligence that goes into the design of a poker playing robot that has all of the hand information that a human has. That's very interesting. So that when you go on, you're not sure whether you're playing against humans or robots. And that's very disquieting to people. It makes you nervous, the idea that you're playing against a robot. Now, why should it make you nervous that you're playing against a robot? Does the robot pass the Turing test from your point of view?
I would feel like it had better information than me. Even though poker is supposed to be a game of incomplete information, I would feel that having a computer that is able to, you know, analyze past hands and like perfect pot odds, that would make me very nervous.
Yeah.
And the way that I guess Addington and whether it's the last time they're here, supposed to limit poker, which a lot of people play online, pretty mechanical. There's pretty much one right thing to do. So if you had a robot that knew all the rules, it would be much more consistent.
And also they can, I don't know what's about the shots, but I knew a kid in college who sort of was working on this kind of stuff, and he said that there's something called neural networks where you basically can program poker players. So these guys are like just constantly playing poker and getting better and better, so that eventually when they're playing, I mean, you're basically playing, as you say, like sort of someone who's got perfect information as far as it can go. Like, literally can look at 500 hands he's played against the player he's up against in a one-on-one showdown and analyze based on that. So that would be a little bit disconcerting, especially if you're playing for sort of higher stakes.
So, apropos of this, the most interesting conversation that I had down there with a poker player was with Howard Lederer on the subject of rock, scissor, paper, and whether rock, scissor, paper is a game of skill. Everybody know how to play rock, scissors, paper? How many would say it's a game of skill?
I think they have a competition, actually. I remember reading somewhere about like computer programming. Like a legitimate rock, paper, scissors world championship. And yeah. These guys, if you like see interviews with them, they've got strategies like the rock slide is when you just keep throwing rocks out and stuff like that. They have names for like if you're changing it up, and it's crazy.
Yeah, but I mean, do you really think it's a game of skill? Or do you think these guys are just bullshit artists? So has anybody actually demonstrated any longevity as a rock, scissors, paper player?
It's usually the same people in the finals, or in like the last couple of rounds, but that's also because I don't think there's many people who enter.
I mean, I looked at this thing and I thought, this is a TV promotion. This is another thing, and it's even cheaper to produce than poker. You don't even need a webcam. You just these people up there going, rock, scissors, paper, rock. So you really think, what's the skill? Tell me the skill.
Being able to guess what the next person's going to throw based on their past throws.
Yeah, but so it's a pattern recognition thing.
Yeah.
So what are you judging? Are you recognize the pattern, but a pattern against what? What's the base? Suppose you were programming a computer to play rock, scissors, paper. Could you program the computer so that you couldn't be beaten? I don't mean just in any one contest, but I mean in the long run.
Against a specific player or against them?
Against anybody. Yeah, Ryan.
If humans are incapable of producing truly random throws, then, or I mean, if the human brain is not capable of producing sufficiently random or arbitrary or unpredictable things, then you might be able to do a pattern. But you certainly couldn't guarantee victory against another computer.
No, I'm playing computer against human. I'm with you. I'm trying to write a program that can't be beaten by a human. Yeah.
And I think the only way it would work is if people aren't capable of producing random rock, paper, or scissors, random one of three, and there's some kind of structural way that people, or maybe individual players, happen to kind of pattern their choices, then it seems like a computer, through recording, you know, an infinite number of hands, would be able to pick up a pattern better than a human player. I just don't know why, in principle.
All right, just hold on there, right there. So you're right on. That is, the machine that can't be beaten is the machine that plays randomly and is able to pattern recognize non-randomness by the human player. So that the strategy would be that you continue to play randomly until you pick up through pattern recognition, what the deviation from random is that's being expressed by the person playing against you. And once you pick up the pattern, and only then do you deviate from random yourself in order to take advantage of the pattern. Does that make sense to everybody?
But suppose that your opponent can emulate your pattern recognition algorithm and know when you're going to switch from random to pattern recognized play. Then they can basically do the exact same thing you're doing, only better.
Precisely. And we're now into what I would call poker strategic thinking. That is, this is exactly what happens at the poker table. It's exactly the idea of trying to convey some pattern in your own play, but in a circumstance where you're actually laying a trap for the opposing computer to adjust their play with bigger stakes on the table at a time when you can then play the reverse on them. Absolutely. But to me, it's extremely useful to actually think of it in rigorous terms from the simplest possible example. And rock, scissors, paper really is an example that simplifies right down to the most basic. So we have some very interesting events coming up now. November. Saturday, we're doing a conference here on the educational utility of poker. And what we're putting on the table, well, first we have some wonderful people coming to help us. We'll have Jim McManus, who wrote Positively Fifth Street, and Mike Sexton, who is really a guy who's just been into every aspect of the explosion of poker, media and financial. And a guy named Alan Schoenmacher, who's kind of like the psychologist of poker, worked very closely with a guy named David Skolansky, who is like the dean, the real conceptualist. And I'm actually hoping he'll be here as well, because there's a WPT event in Foxwoods. Is it WPT? I don't know what it is. It is WPT. Yes, it is. And if he's out of it by Saturday, it's a 3-day event with Saturday the third day. If he's out of it by the Saturday, he'll come. And so we're hoping he loses. Seems very ungrateful. It's nonetheless. But the thing that's interesting about that is I've got the approval of the Berkman Center to buy a second island in Second Life and locate it right next to the Berkman Center and have the gate between the poker university. So it's like a mandate to build a poker university in a virtual space. And I spoke with Howard Lederer, who is interested from the point of view of Full Tilt, which is a very good online poker company, to work with me in the construction of an online poker space to my specifications, which would include an excellent registration system, a security system that is based on this absolute event, which so stunningly at once demonstrated the need for oversight of online poker tournaments, and at the same time demonstrated the method by which to accomplish it, namely the complete transparency of hand history, and so offers the potential of a self-regulating environment that could actually be trusted. And also a sufficient control over the environment that I could insist that people only move, that people start at the bottom, users start at the bottom, and only move forward in terms of playing at higher stake with money that they've earned. And if they lose their stake, they start over again at the bottom. And the reason why it's constructed that way, I mean, numbers of reasons, but it creates an incentive-based learning environment and provides yet another argument that this form of poker is not gambling. It's not gambling in the sense that you can't lose any money in this environment that you hadn't won before in that environment. In other words, it doesn't take in new money. And so I think we'll actually be assembling at this November 10 conference as many people as we can who have worked at teaching about poker and teaching through poker and teaching using games other than poker, but for which poker would be a natural follow-on, and talk about what the code environment would look like for a poker university, and also then talk about what the curriculum would be and how one would go about developing curriculum. So that's coming up on November 10th. And I'm hoping to follow it in the evening with a poker tournament, charity poker tournament, and to have this conference take place not only in Austin East, where it's at least presently scheduled, but also take place in Second Life and stream to the net. There's numbers of people who on short notice might like to come but can't, and the opportunity to actually hold the conference in a way that begins to instantiate the methodology of the distance education that we're trying to accomplish seems very attractive. Then on November 14th, Andrew's arranging a face-off between UCLA and USC out in Los Angeles, at which Annie Duke is scheduled to come and participate. And we're thinking about how one would use this event in a way that integrates it more than just being an event out in Los Angeles. So there's possibilities for webcasts and Second Life and stuff coming back in this direction or in some other direction. November 14th, in this class, will be a session with a quite wonderful group that is focused on the potential linkage of different strands of different constituencies, the linking of constituencies. I've invited two people who are effectively representatives of the consumer electronics industry, which has recognized a self-interest to the point of its willingness to hire professional lobbyists to support open internet. That is, the people who make hardware products have come to see their self-interest in an open net and are putting lobbying dollars behind it. And the two people that are involved with that are a guy named Vijay, who's like the staff guy, and a guy and a woman named Maura Corbett, who is like the public relations person, the professional that the lobbyists, that the industry that's wanting influence in Washington hires in order to affect Washington and the media. It's like those are the people that set up the meetings. You ask, how were these meetings set up? They're set up, John Pappas is the guy that is running Poker Players Alliance. He's got some budget to do this. He's actually hired a company, seems like a company that runs these lobbying meetings. So I went to this breakfast meeting with a guy in the hotel who's got a slideshow who gives you lessons on you know, what lobbying is about. And they talk, give you a talk, basically, before they send you off on this schedule of activity. Then they actually had people who, I guess they must do it as a living, take people around to the offices as a kind of a subgroup of people hired at a day rate, as far as you could tell, maybe even a half day rate, to take people around to the offices. And they had somehow advanced with the people who scheduled for the congressman a set of basically entries, just the way you'd sign up for office hours. And that's the way it was done. So like after this breakfast at a hotel, there's a bus that takes off for the Capitol. And then the next morning there was this panel discussion. And what I should say, when I spoke to one of the people who had come from California to do this, who had been through the process, I was really impressed. I really was impressed with how effective a process it actually turned out to be and how meaningful it was for this guy from California to have come and participated in it and gone and spoken to his congressman. Plus, the stuff that he got back from the congressman was like gold. He went to see Jane Harman. Anybody know who Jane Harman is? California, graduate of this law school, student of mine, somebody who I was close to in law school, have kept up very warm connection with. So I'm very interested. He's gone to see Jane. And what's Jane's problem? Oh, first, when they're instructed to go into the meeting, the idea is to go in with something that you ask for, because that's the measure of success. Have you actually achieved a commitment from the person you're speaking to? And so you have to have something to ask for to which they can commit. Makes sense. And this group was telling us to ask for a commitment to either co-sponsor or, I guess, vote for Barney Frank's repeal, Barney Frank's bill. Okay. So they go into Jane Harman, and Jane says, nope, I am the one who introduced the Port Security Act, to which the Unlawful Internet Gaming Enforcement Act was attached as a rider. So if I sign on to a repeal of that, I might be seen to somehow be undermining my commitment to the Port Security Bill, the change in my bill. And that, why do I want to take that up? That was one reason. Now, I don't know that this was actually her reason or whether it's through hearsay that I've got it, but nonetheless, that's the essence of what comes through. The second is I've got constituents who are sensitive about gambling. Why should I take this up? But, she said, I am interested in the WTO. And why is she interested in the WTO? Because she's from Los Angeles, which is like the home of the copyright industry, which is now drawn into this WTO environment. And so she invites further contact on the WTO. So, in a sense, she's like a judge. She's saying, all right, you've presented your case, but your case has the following weaknesses. If you want me to give you something, you've got to solve those problems. You've got to somehow deal with the fact that it's a rider on my act. You've got to somehow give me an argument on gambling that will work for me. And you've got to show me something through this WTO that will let me deliver something to the constituency that powerfully backs me. Makes complete sense, right? So here was this meeting that was set up in which, as far as I can tell, an actually honest dialogue was taking place. It was very instructive. and sends you out thinking, well, how can we solve those problems? Then the next one that came up that was interesting. This guy was about to go see Congressman Wexler, also from California, and a guy who really represents the copyright industry to the point where he was the sponsor of the Berman Bill, which would have enabled the copyright industry to use offensive tactics in defending themselves on the net, like denial of service. So if you were downloading in some serious way, then the industry could flood your computer with bits to a point where you're jammed. Right, so basically offensive internet tactics. He sponsored a bill that would have enabled, didn't pass, but would have enabled those tactics. That's the kind of soldier he is for the copyright industry. By the way, I think that's actually not a bad idea as a way of handling problems on the net. But that's another subject altogether. But the question was how to approach Berman now about the WTO. This guy had the intelligence that a congressman from California who was going to be interested in the WTO. Now he's going to talk to another congressman from California. And what's he going to say about the WTO? And here are the choices. Do you come in saying, you really got to tune in on this WTO thing, Congressman? The island of Antigua is threatening $3.4 billion to be taken away from your industry. And the European Union, who knows what they're going to do? Do you come in saying that? Or do you come in assuming that he already knows something about the WTO? That it's already a sufficient issue amongst the people who lobby copyright so that he will have heard from his people about it first? And if you thought that was the case, how would that change how you would approach it? So here, constitute yourself a little lobbying group. And you're about to have an appointment with me, Congressman Berman. And you want to basically get my attention. What argument would you make? Here, talk amongst yourselves.
Basically, there was a sense of if we don't stop them, we're going to get anti-Canada.
transfer money to offshore and like gaming sites then.
See, usually those big numbers like $2 million.
Copyright something like that, like the basically the money out of the station, it'll be less regulated.
They want to try to make
something like that.
All right, so the assignment for this group over here is to choose a spokesperson.
No, I wouldn't. We're not spokesperson. What did you say?
It's not a threat, it's a promise.
So we can help you kind of deal with it.
All right, the assignment for this group over here is to choose a spokesperson. And the assignment for this group up here is to choose a spokesperson.
What?
The assignment for this group up here is to choose a spokesperson.
What's like
you?
You
mean like somebody
silver bullet?
To represent the group, goes to the congressman permanent.
Taste good.
Hold it.
So anybody in this room? Can you pick anybody in this room?
No, just between the two of you.
Okay.
That's what you get for not being friendly.
The silver bullet that killed
me. I was going to talk, but what was your argument?
Now you're
confused.
Holy elephant.
It's
golden goose.
It's
golden
goose.
It's
golden goose.
It's
golden goose. It's
golden goose. It's golden goose.
The brass ring.
The brass ring?
They don't get that at all.
Yeah.
We should just talk to them in
a secure
way. Yes, exactly. That's a connection. I guess maybe they won't
think you
would work.
Isn't it true that
the guy who we're talking about is
the threat, the copyright threat, a lot of people think that that's just like an empty threat because you can't ask for something about that.
How can entity probably really won't infringe on the $1.5 million worth of it? Now, wait a second, we're going to do this all at once. It's going to be like one, two, three, shoot. One, two, three, and it's either going to, you're going to put out one finger, two fingers, or three fingers.
We have expectations if we go first, and then.
All right. Whoever the spokesperson is. Whoever the spokesperson is.
You're throwing
out one, two, or three.
Don't lose.
Don't lose.
And you want the highest number?
No, it.
I would pick the highest.
Which place do you want to go? Do you want to go first? Do you want to go second? Do you want to go third? All right. One, two, three, shoot. One, two, three. Very interesting. All right, one, let's go down.
I got to go up front?
Yep. That's what this chair is for.
Can I take all my clothes off or am I okay?
So you're all right the way you are.
That was mostly a joke. It's too cold to get naked.
Yeah, mostly.
How you doing today?
So how do you do? It's just a pleasure to have you come in.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Yes, appreciate it.
Yeah, so let's cut through the BS and let's just get down to business.
Oh, I love a man like you.
All right. So we feel that the transferring of money to offshore accounts for these websites, not going to come.
Just let me stop you though first. Okay. Who are you?
I'm the man.
I mean, why are you here?
I'm the dude.
Yeah, I got that. But when you say we, who's we?
We are, who are we, guys?
Poker Players Alliance.
There we go.
Poker Players Alliance.
The Poker Players Alliance.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. I saw that on my schedule. I should have known that.
I mean, it's all right. We're an up-and-coming group.
Yes.
So, you know, don't expect you to have heard of us until now. Hopefully we're making a good impression on you today.
I'll let you know later.
So yeah, we'd just like to talk to you a little bit about this this situation that you're in right now.
What's that?
The situation regarding the transferring of money to offshore accounts, the problem that you've got with your constituents in that.
I'm not aware of any problem that my constituents have with transferring money to offshore accounts.
Offshore accounts to engage in card games online.
Not a problem that my constituents have.
Really? What are we doing? I'm calling Jihad in on this one since he's...
We're going to do a 20-minute, 20-second timeout real quick.
Okay, 20-second
quick
timeout.
Quick sub.
Come down here, Jihad. Sacrifice the seat.
Yes. Oh, no, you can sit down there, too. I just want to do a quick sub.
Castle for Brady. Quick sub. Come on here.
What was your name again, sir?
Jack Berman.
Jack Berman, nice to meet you. Jihad Buchan with the Poker Players Alliance. But I'd like to talk to you today more about your constituents, and your constituents in Hollywood. Now, I'd like to talk to you about the intellectual property in Hollywood. I mean, is that something that concerns you a lot? Is it a big deal for you?
Yes.
Great. Well, I'm also concerned about that, too. And what I've learned recently is that the WTO will not be enforcing some of these intellectual property rights very much in other countries, which would be a huge hit to a lot of people in your constituency. So, the plan that we've decided to help your constituents would be to back a recent bill in Congress. And this bill would allow people in America to transfer money into gaming sites offshores in order to protect the WTO's regulation of intellectual property.
Why do I want Americans transferring money offshore?
Well, the most important thing for us and for you is that we're protecting intellectual property rights in America.
Wait a minute. How are we protecting intellectual property rights by letting people transfer money to offshore?
Well, the reason that this is where Schirmer comes back with our ideas. I just wanted to introduce him a little bit better.
You mean that's it? That's it? You get him in that kind of trouble and you
exactly.
Put him back in the
Sure.
You're in trouble, dude.
You're doing such a good job. I'm always in trouble.
I just wanted to introduce him.
On timeout.
Put the nose things back.
Look professional in my verse hoodie too. Okay, so you've raised a great question.
Yeah.
What do these two things have to do with each other?
Yes.
And unfortunately, in this world of politics, the WTO has influence over both the enforcement of intellectual property rights abroad, and they have an interest in transferring money to offshore gaming accounts. It's a fact of life. Just have to deal with it. But since you're more interested in protecting intellectual property,
the WTO controls. What does it control?
It doesn't control, but it has an influence on the enforcement of international copyright laws, I believe.
Pardon the vernacular. All right, I can see you're a man. We're talking.
I'm a man. We'll go that far.
What's that got to do with anything?
I don't know. Time out. Jihad, you're back.
You guys are in trouble.
All
right,
but
it's time.
This is why we went in first, so there was no bar to be set by anybody else. So we're setting the bar so these guys can look better. That's what we are.
Excellent. Well, I appreciate that. That's excellent. It's been a pleasure to see you. I
don't believe
wish
that.
You well.
I'm going to need it.
That's what you guys get for sending me.
Dude, you said you were the spokesperson for the whole class.
Yeah, but this isn't the whole class.
Of course, I have to say, it wouldn't have gone anything like that. Because I never would have risked actually offending you by asking you a serious question. That puts my first objective at risk, which is for you to leave feeling like you've been listened to. You don't feel like you were listened to, do you?
I more don't feel like I knew what I was talking about.
Are we supposed to try to convince you to co-sign one of those bills that we're doing? Or are we just trying to convince you why you care about the issue?
I hate to make that your objective, because I wouldn't back that bill. And to me, the idea of inviting federal regulation is just unacceptable to me. I felt like one of the things I observed while I was there was the political expression of a supine industry. And the idea that the online poker industry is in Washington actually paying people, begging for federal regulation, is extraordinary. And why would you do that? Well, the only reason you would do it is if you were persecuted to a point where you thought this was the only way that you had of going forward. And it strikes me as not a strong position at all. So I hate to put you in the position of actually asking for a commitment. And I didn't actually go visit any congressman myself to ask for a commitment to Barney's bill. I'm not actually in favor of Barney's bill.
I'll just toss out there that the casino gambling has thrived under heavy regulation. So maybe they see an analog to casino gambling and hope that.
Oh, I think they do. They definitely see it as a path to a legitimate structure. So I'm not questioning the motive at all, but in terms of a strategy, to invite a government to regulate the industry means to invite every government to regulate the industry. And this is an industry that hasn't yet explored self-regulation in any significant way to speak of at all. And with the absolute thing demonstrating the feasibility of rigorous self-regulation, usually the problem of self-regulation is you don't know how to do it. But we actually know a good deal about how we can do this. And so if you have people you can trust doing the thing you know how to do, that begins to look like you don't need government, which I have a very hard time trusting in many respects, doing it. So yes, my take on it. In fact, I would say one of the things I learned while I was down there was just thinking this problem through to a point where it became clear to me that let me put it practically in terms of November 10th. One could construct an online educational poker playing environment, which not only had all these attributes I described to you before of regulation, registration, control, but also went forward on an algorithm that returned to the country of the player's origin a piece of the rake, so that from a legislator's point of view, being asked to accept this, it would be an environment which didn't require the creation of a regulatory authority, and yet returned money to each government that was ready to recognize it in a way that was like, okay, credible good money on a fair distributional basis. And so that would seem to me to be the plausible structure of a global organization that could relate to governments all around the world without getting into the idea that somehow you're subject to the regulation of all of the governments in the world, which just is illusory. Does that make sense? Yeah. All right, team number two.
So I'm not asking you to support the bill now. I'm just asking for a general support for online poker.
I'd be delighted to see you ask for my support for a bill that would recognize the lawfulness of tournament poker.
Hi, I'm Doug McMahon from the Online Poker Alliance.
How do you do? I'm Jack Berman. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. I'm here today to ask for your support for a bill that would allow online poker game tournaments, a variation of poker whereby there's no cash stakes as such, but where the game would involve the ability of players to win a tournament in which the object would be to win by a game of skill. And the idea would be they would progress in the tournament based on their skill, but they wouldn't have the chance of losing any money they haven't won already in the game.
What do you mean? I mean, they're playing for money, right?
They pay initial stake, which is their kind of almost like an entrance fee, which will be set at a low rate, and then they play against other players with the objective of becoming the best player in that tournament. The idea isn't to accumulate wealth, it's to become the best poker player. And that's the emphasis of this new form of tournament that we're trying to create.
And why? What's special about this?
We believe that there are various benefits to learning about learning through poker. There's benefits in strategic thinking which can't be gained from other games, and which, in order to maximize the potential for people to learn through this medium, we believe that online poker tournaments could be a key part in the strategy to create learning through this system. And we don't believe there are sufficient reasons or dangers in this system inherent that would make sense to restrict the ability of this coming into existence.
So why should I be in favor of this?
Well, we believe that you should be in favor of this purely from, on two levels. The first level is the reason to be in favor of it is because there'll be benefits generally to the country as a whole and to your constituencies who won't take part in the online poker games, the things they can learn from it.
Yes, I appreciate that, but I mean, I've got constituents who are worried about gambling and who don't like gambling and don't like me to like gambling. So what do I say to them?
Well, we can help you say to them this isn't gambling, that this is actually something which is very different. And one of our aims as an organization is to promote the idea of poker in a sense which is removed from the cash stakes gambling which has been kind of previously associated with using the kind of resources we have because of online poker, because of TV-based poker. And the extent that coverage has come around, so we're hoping to kind of push the envelope so far that people now accept kind of poker in its forms in tournament play on television, and we want to push it so that we get to the point where poker is recognized as a strategic thinking environment.
You know, that Los Angeles is the home of poker.
I should know that. So.
Yes, actually, California has approved poker card rooms to an extent that no other state has, and the most concentrated population of poker play is right here in Los Angeles.
And we envisage that potential bill to support online poker playing would allow constituents in Los Angeles and California to play online so they could take the skills they learn in the game room.
No, I want them playing in the card rooms in California. To play online, they'd send the money off to Costa Rica.
Well, we envisage the tournament poker play to mean that the percentage of the rate would take back, and so that could potentially be taxed. So there would be an amount of money which would be brought back into the environment. If we think of this in terms of chips, that's maybe a very small part of the money that could be benefit from having online poker playing. There's also linked, as I'm sure you know, the WTO case, which has the potential to deprive other members of your constituency from enormous amounts of money through.
Yes, I'm interested in the WTO.
Well, the way we look at this is that there are very few downsides to allowing the deregulation or the allowing online tournament poker play to come about, and there's obviously beneficial aspects to your constituents of being a player online poker, and then.
Well, suppose this thing that you want me to support goes through. Does it help the WTO thing in any way? I mean, as far as I can tell, the WTO is like a threat. So it's going to help in some way.
Potentially, it could help, particularly if it's the Poker Act is created in such ways that it will address the problems that the WTO case have presented. At the moment, the WTO case, it is potentially a threat. We don't know whether or not we don't know the amount of money that's at stake necessarily as yet, and we don't know whether the TRIPS is going to be able to be used to enforce it. But that if we are going to create a poker bid, it would make enormous sense to look at the legal issues there and decide what were our commitments there originally and how can we come about creating online poker play. It's very likely that there'll be a way of drafting an act so as that the way in which online gambling, the exception that's created in the US laws or the regulation of it.
Well, thanks very much for stopping by. It's been a pleasure to talk with you. Appreciate the counsel that you've given me on this. When you come up with something, please feel free to communicate it to me.
Will do. Thank you very much for your time.
Yes. Did you win or lose?
Close. Yeah, really close. I think you did a good job.
I don't fully understand it, but it seems like there has to be some articulation of the relationship between enforcement of copyright law and the resolving the poker issue in the WTO. And I don't fully understand how they're connected, but I understand that.
You're right on. I mean, when you look at it from the side of the people that are pushing the WTO thing forward, they're just begging the U.S. to negotiate with them in some way. I went to a Cato Institute event at which the lawyer representing Antigua, quite a remarkable guy, spoke on a panel. And he was just begging the United States to get into some kind of settlement discussion. He's a plaintiff's lawyer. He's looking for a settlement. And so you wonder what it would take to settle with Antigua. It certainly doesn't take $3.4 billion, that's for damn sure. The wild card in the picture now is the involvement of the EU. I mean, Antigua is this minuscule trading partner of the United States. And I don't believe that the WTO is about to go to war with the United States copyright industry on behalf of Antigua. I just don't believe it. It's a threat. And it's interesting. But the idea that in a real world it would actually follow through to that result seems very unlikely to me. On the other hand, there's a whole wonderful structure that's moving forward that now has involved the European Union, which is like a serious trading partner. And they are seriously looking at the extent to which the United States has shut them out of an industry that's multi-billion dollar industry. And so the fat's in the fire at this point. Where does that leave the copyright industry? Where does that leave the general counsel for some, whatever it is, the RIAA, MPA, whatever, that's talking to Berman about the threat? Are they completely uninterested? No, I don't think they're completely uninterested. Are they quaking in fear that they're about to get decked with a $3.4 billion piracy operation backed by the WTO? No, I don't think so either. But they'd be up for talking about something that would settle it. And from their point of view, something that recognized online poker in a way that produced revenue for entertainment companies. And, let's talk. That seems much more likely to be where it's at. And, but I have to say, Doug, as Berman, I'm learning something from you. This is not, this. I'm actually paying attention and trying out ideas, and you're talking about something I care about.
One question I have, the European Union getting enforcement, it won't be by TRIPS, but because they can do it
no.
with gas quite
Yeah, they have, they don't have to do the copyright war.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So that, I mean, so it's hard to just talk
Yes, about I should have said, Antigua, the reason Antigua suggests these copyright violations is because the normal way of doing a WTO thing is to trade off trade sanctions on the other's goods. But Antigua is so small, and the United States is so big, that Antigua could discriminate against US products to its own disadvantage, by the way, until it's blue in the face, and it wouldn't make a dent on the United States. So instead of going for typical trade sanction, Antigua is going for this unusual form of offsetting sanction, of allowing Antigua to violate U.S. copyright laws by producing material in violation of the TRIPS agreement to the value, supposedly, of what they've lost. So it's an interesting ploy, but its real effect has been to galvanize the European Union rather than to itself be the hammer that's going to produce the resolution. I think that's the way I read it. Yeah. All right, so number three.
Hi, Congressman Berman. My name is Rochelle Lee, and I'm working for Poker Players Alliance.
Hello, Michelle.
You're
not exactly working for them.
Okay.
But just to clarify, you're a constituent of mine.
Okay.
Is a member of the Poker Players Alliance,
okay.
Who's come to Washington as part of an organized group that they've put together.
Okay.
And I've made time to see you, and I'm so delighted to see you.
Well, it's very nice to meet you. I'm one of your constituents, and I wanted to bring an issue to your attention regarding the copyright industry, which is, as I understand, very important to Los Angeles and your constituents.
It's my bread and butter.
Now, I'm sure as you know, Antigua has threatened to infringe on American copyright and intellectual property as a result of a decision handed down by the WTO.
Yes, I've read those stories.
Now, I would like to propose a solution that would not only allow the United States to come into compliance with the WTO, but would also allow the U.S., including Los Angeles, to enter into the online poker tournament industry without getting into online gambling.
The online poker tournament industry?
Yes.
Tell me about that.
Well, basically, we propose a bill that would legalize online poker tournament play, which is a form of online gaming which would where individual participants put in a stake, which they play against other players until there's one winner. So it's not gambling in the traditional sense, in that you can risk all your money, lose it, and then buy back in. But rather, it's a tournament where a bunch of people, a group of people, play each other in tournament fashion until one person wins a pot. Now, if the U.S. was allowed to...
So why isn't that gambling?
Well, it's not gambling because you're not putting... So all you put in, everyone puts in a stake, which is basically like an entry fee into the tournament. So it's not gambling because you're not risking an amount of money that you'll lose. Rather, you're paying an entry fee to get into the tournament, in which at the end there's a prize. this is sort of comparable to, say, if you had a professional golf tournament where you would pay an entry fee to enter. You would all, each of the players would play against each other until they won at the end, and at the end there's a prize. In addition, this...
So it's still a little bit like gambling, though.
Well, we believe that poker is a game of skill, and is therefore it's not gambling.
Like, golf, but like...
Right, other than the fact that there are chips involved, and that poker grew up in the world of casinos and in Las Vegas, other than that, it bears very little resemblance to gambling.
Well, very interesting, Rochelle.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming.
I hope that you support our bill, or Congressman somebody's bill. Thank you.
All right, so that's actually pretty much where it stands. It's like... very interesting situation politically. The major arguments against poker are the moral argument and the addiction argument. Are there arguments beyond that? And the moral argument is based on gambling. And so to have some approach that engages people on the issue of gambling is definitely useful. And I actually believe that the far right, the fundamentalist right, which has been a mainstay of the anti-gambling forces, are vulnerable at this point to a good argument. Gambling is way down their list of important priorities. It's been weakening steadily as television has been acclimatizing people. Las Vegas has become a resort destination. And I think there's a ton of people on the far right that love to play poker. And so they'd be open to an argument that at least there is a form of poker that's not gambling, at least not gambling in the way that they've been accustomed to thinking about gambling as like a bad thing. And then the addiction argument. I just spent the afternoon at the Harvard Division of Addictions with people who've been doing research on this stuff for now close to 14, 15 years. And the addiction arguments are just extremely interesting. I had thought it might be plausible to argue that tournament poker is not as addictive as other forms of gambling. Somehow the length of play, in contrast to the return on the slot machine, which is instantaneous, would mean that it would be less addictive because the reward is further out. And it was brought to my attention by Howard Schaffer and Richard LaBrie, and this wonderful woman who runs this addiction center, that in Denmark, where poker tournaments are highly prevalent. Actually, Denmark appears to be like a poker-playing nation. Like, these people had data from a big company that included both casino gaming and sports betting and poker. And the Danes are a very low percentage of casino gaming and sports betting, but a remarkably high percentage of the poker playing people. And the Danish court has just found not guilty a defendant who was prosecuted for organizing poker tournaments. And it appears that there's a federation in Denmark of tournament plays, so that in almost every town, you can go and play in a poker tournament on like a twice a week basis. And it turns out that there is a fairly high incidence of poker players coming to seek addiction help. But they counseled me, interestingly, that not to think that that meant these were people who had lost a lot of money. The indication was rather that these are people who got so into the game and into the playing of tournaments that they caused problems in their home. You know, they weren't picking up the kids at school and that sort of thing. But that's just extremely interesting. It's like the game is too interesting to some people. It's a problem of community public health that the game is too interesting to some people, even in its tournament form, or maybe even especially in its tournament form. So I thought that was very interesting. All right, now, I wanted to ask you to come in tomorrow thinking about two things. One is this project that I've laid out to this point and carried through to this point has caught fire in an amazing way in many respects. The stuff that Doug did was just remarkable in terms of stimulating interest. And so I feel like we actually have in our grip a pretty good example of the Cyber One idea. Of the way I think about it is layered communities of interest focused on a single point, and figuring out how to choose your point and then structure an environment that stimulates layered communities of interest. That's like the Cyber One challenge. So I'm interested in two things. One, how and whether you would like to participate on a continuing basis through the semester on the follow-ups to what I've been doing so far. Excuse me. And I would like to have you think about your own project. I'd like to have each of you think about a point that you feel is interesting, to a point where you think you could advance an argument about it, that you think could engage layered communities of interest. And just come in and we'll just talk. I mean, you don't have to have it in any kind of particularly fancy way, but I'd really like to spend tomorrow talking with you about projects you can do and ways in which you could do them. You can look back to last year's Cyber One for the projects, see the projects that the students did last year. I don't mean to limit you or even constrain you to any kind of form. Those take different forms. But I'm as interested in anything as a part of this, in your choice of the point and your crafting of a line of argument that somehow is designed to advance it. That is the same kind of thought process that I've tried to elaborate here that brings this interest in poker down to a focal point on a structure that one can arguably advance as not gambling. It's a process, in a sense, of identifying where the opposition is and then crafting a position that meets its objections. It's like coming up with the response to Jane Harmon or to the judge or to the whoever is skeptical about your argument on the other side, and meeting them not with opposition, but meeting them by satisfying. So in a sense, it's asking you to think about what it is we're trying to think about in here. What it is, it's a request to think about the way in which what we're talking about is like the structure of argument. All right, great. See you tomorrow.